Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Earlier this morning, the NUMAD Group, with support from the Bush Foundation, welcomed Stephen M. Ryan to the garage in Rapid City for the morning fill-up. Ryan is an attorney in Washington, D.C. He began his career in public service, providing counsel to President Ronald Reagan's administration. Recently, Ryan served on the legal team for President Donald Trump's former lawyer, Michael Cohen. In his time at the garage this morning, he shared his insights on the legal, political, and press-related challenges facing the country today. Stephen Ryan joins us from the Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio in Rapid City. Mr. Ryan, welcome to In the Moment. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Lori. And if you can call me Steve, that'd be great.
That's perfect. All right. So we look back at this career and we talk about, you know, the Cold War and the economic challenges during the Reagan administration to the Michael Cohen trial and the state of political discourse today. You've had an insider view to a lot of challenges over the years. When people ask you to talk about some of those challenges that we're facing today, where do you usually begin?
So I think the things that are interesting about being a Washington lawyer is your ability to represent people who are deeply involved in national security and other issues. So I've sort of had a bromance over the years with men like Rob O'Neill, who's from Montana, who killed Osama bin Laden, and I helped him with his book. I have represented people like Secretary of the Interior Ryan Zinke and other people in Washington who are in the political game, and I care deeply about it. I work for Senator John Glenn in the Senate, and I was chief counsel of his committee. So I worked on the government side, and I've now been representing people who have to answer to government.
And I'm wondering how you sort of ended up with that interesting combination, really. I mean, how did you follow a career in that direction?
Sure. So I was a federal prosecutor. I began my federal career really as a assistant U.S. attorney and as an organized crime prosecutor. And so being able to defend someone comes from the ability to prosecute them. And then I was chief counsel of a Senate committee. And so it's a very logical progression to being on the defense side of some of the same issues. And I am a traditional lobbyist. I do a lot of cyber work because that's important right now. So what's great about being a Washington lawyer, you could touch a lot of different areas, and you don't have to absolutely be rigidly specialized in one area.
All right. So you mentioned cyber work, and that's something we've talked about a lot on this program. Let's talk about some of those challenges because, you know, also this idea of having an insider view. A lot of people on the outside don't really know how serious this is and how much is really unfolding right now that you know, we're not going to read about in the morning newspaper or here on the radio.
So I think you're absolutely right. And if you want your child or grandchild to have a career, send them to cybersecurity school to be a professional in this area, because there's a lot of work and a lot of jobs. But from a standpoint of the private sector, I just recently tried a case where someone had defrauded a client by stealing $10 million worth of something using the internet and using a fraud scheme. Fraud has always been with us, but now it's fraud on the internet. And I've learned how to explain cyber concepts to juries and judges and to policymakers. And I think I'm not an expert in the problems, but I am an expert in trying to translate them into language that people can understand. And I'm deeply concerned, for example, about the attacks from China and Iran on the United States by state actors who are involved in these activities, as well as criminals. I'm mainly dealing with the criminal side and not the government side.
But you are hearing from those insider conversations about really what is going on a state level. There's a lot happening in our relationship with China right now, with international trade, and some pretty serious back and forth. Do we have a right to be pretty concerned about the future of our relationship with China?
So I think we have to rethink the relationship with China. President Xi has made some very strong statements, and if you just listen to his statements about a 30-year war with the United States or a battle for ascendancy against our country. And of course, we are very big trade partners, so we're integrally related to one another. On a personal level, the Chinese have a billion people or more than a billion people, and so they're 3-4 times our population, and they're looking a lot like an ascending power. And the question is, how are the United States, the most important power in the world, going to deal with an ascending power like China. And cyber is one of the areas where we're challenging each other, I think, and where we have to rethink the degree to which the private sector outsources to China, for example. So it's not just a government issue, it's a business issue as well.
Sure. Can you regulate that, though? Is that something that business, you know, people in the private sector needs to be self-regulating for?
So, I mean, obviously, those of us who are involved in the internet, and I'm involved helping the physical running of the internet in the numbers community, which are the Whois database for internet protocol numbers, very technical area. So we don't want government to be involved in running the internet, but we have to be involved with government protecting us, for example, from state actors who may want to put malware into the civilian area or who want to steal secrets from our companies so that they'll be less competitive. So I think the relationship with China is a complex one. It needs to be thoughtfully managed, and it's on many levels. It's on the national security level. It's on the cyber level. It's on the trade level. It's on the education level. Should we be educating as many Chinese students here? I think the answer is yes, but there are people who don't agree. So it's a complex area, and it's not particularly mine, but the cyber area is one that I have carved out a little bit of work in.
When we talk about cyber crime and also cyber war, one of the challenges is these are things that we don't necessarily know are happening, and therefore it's hard to have the same kind of transparency that you have about other issues, you know, boots on the ground situations. What are some of the challenges for that as far as just, you know, holding people accountable? We don't want to see these things play out years later in the courtroom, really.
Well, we did see the indictment of the group in St. Petersburg that was charged with interfering with the 2016 election. I don't suspect any of them would be foolish enough to leave Russia, but they've been indicted and are there. And so we have a lot of secret indictments in the government that are waiting for people who have committed crimes against the United States and think that they're safe. And then if they go to the wrong country, as one of them went to the Maldives the other day, and he got picked up and was extradited to the United States. So our government is working in these areas, and we have a very skillful law enforcement officers and foreign counterintelligence people working on these issues. And we also have an offensive capability as a government that we project into other people's countries. So it's a new world. It's a world of intrigue and danger and expense to the business community.
Mm. You mentioned really being in the political game. How has that game changed? What are some of the ways that you've really seen that political game change inside the Beltway?
So I worked for John Glenn, and Senator Glenn was a man of great integrity. He was liked by members on both sides of the aisle, and he cooperated with his Democratic colleagues, but he also cooperated with his Republican counterparts. And I think they all knew each other better. They used to stay for the weekend more in Washington, and they'd meet each other's children. And you can't be mean to somebody when you've met their children or their spouse. It's harder to be inappropriate when you know them as people. And so I think part of what's happened is that people are running home because they're afraid of being primaried. Republicans are afraid of ending up like Senator Lee or Senator Lee beating his predecessor in a Republican primary, or Joe Crowley losing his seat in a Democratic primary. So they're worried about not just their election in the fall, but their election in the primary. And I think that's had a negative effect in Washington of driving the Democrats to the left and the Republicans to the right and moving people out of the middle. And in the middle is where we really accomplish things. And cooperation between the parties is critical, and it's at a low, and it's disturbing because we should be doing the taxpayers' business in Washington. Whether we're in government or people like me who are outside of government but served, you still want to do the taxpayers' business, and it's not getting done the way it should.
Mm. You mentioned Joe Crowley, who's a Democrat who lost in the primary to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and one of the key elements of that debate was how strong she was able to come out and say, you know, you're not doing enough, you're not doing enough. Is that division inevitable, or are we seeing, you know, Democrats and Republicans really come forward and say, voters don't want the middle ground staked out. Voters want to win and want to see progress on their core issues. That's how AOC comes into office.
Well, and on the Republican side, it's led to senators on the Republican side that are not going to compromise and are willing to close the government down, Ted Cruz, the senator from Kentucky, Rand Paul, et cetera. And so I think this is a real problem, but voters are responsible for that problem in some ways. Voters can't have people that are so intent on obtaining what they want that they're not willing to compromise in order to achieve good public policy that may not give them everything, but gives them a good piece of what they want. And I think historically we did a better job of that. Gerrymandering, I think, has been a very negative problem in the sense that you wiped out diversity in a state where there'd be Democrats and Republicans in a state, and you only have, for example, in Texas, they got rid of a lot of Democrats who were sort of conservative, yellow dog Democrats who had a good effect on the Democratic Party, and they got wiped out in gerrymandering. And then the Democrats in Maryland got rid of moderate Republicans. So I think gerrymandering is part of the problem. Voters wanting people to be very strong and principled can also lead to the perverse result that there's no agreement.
Mm. We saw that with former South Dakota Senator Tom Daschle, who wrote a book with Trent Lott, and they talked about really almost having to sneak away from the media's gaze to have some of the conversations because of the political fallout of just being in the room together at times. What's the role, as you see it, of the press and the relationship of the press in Washington? Is it contributing to this? Is it helping move in a certain direction? How is the media doing its job right now?
So look, I'm a huge believer in the First Amendment. I worked in Russia and in Latvia and Lithuania and Poland after the Soviet Union fell. And if anything, you look back at your country and see what's right. And the First Amendment and the role of the media is really important to me, as well as the right of people to have a lawyer, which is also self-serving. But with regard to the media, people are self-selecting what media they listen to. So Republicans may listen to Fox and Democrats may listen to CNBC or CNN. And what they're not being done is challenged down the middle on that. But that's self-selection. I think that NPR, for example, is down the middle. I think that the three big newspapers of record, the Wall Street Journal, the Times, and the Post, are critical for the investigative work they do and other media outlets. So I actually don't think that the press is the problem, and I think politicians who dump on the press are not helping us, because the First Amendment's really important. And you can criticize the media, but you shouldn't blanket criticize it.
You've had a really interesting career. Tell us about one of your most stressful days.
Well, the only thing I'll say about the Cohen case is I was up against Michael Avenatti in court, and we as lawyers never oppose someone being admitted to court. And I opposed his admission, and he was not admitted to court, and he withdrew his application. And that was – he at that point had been on, you know, every media show about 150 times. He was riding high, and, you know, that was a day that, you know, I don't know that people expected me to win. I'm not sure I expected to win, but – I did win. And I think it's days like that where you go into a court where there's a United States district judge who's an arbiter of the law. And that's been my life, has been going to courtrooms and having a black robe judge decide who's right and who's wrong. And I love that system. I revere that system, and I revere rule of law because of my experience watching from other countries how our legal system looks.
Steve Ryan, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much for being here. Hope
Thank
South
you.
Dakota treats you well.
It's a beautiful place, and I brought beautiful weather to you.
We appreciate that. We needed some.
Thank you, Lori.